Rough Trade is giving away a third of the first 3 months of the Rough Trade Club plus new music membership exclusively to 101 Part-Time Jobs listeners. Become a member of Rough Trade Club New Music and you'll receive the Rough Trade Album of the Month straight to your door every month on an exclusive vinyl pressing with bonus material. Club members have received exclusive pressings of albums from Sufjan Stevens, Sprints, The Last Dinner Party, English Teacher, and Over Mono, just to name a few, this past year alone. Sign up using the promo code CLUB101POD and you'll get Rough Trade's Album of the Month, Camera Obscura's Look to the East, Look to the West, for a third of the usual price. By signing up, you'll be getting Rough Trade's exclusive issue of the album on opaque purple in a gatefold sleeve, plus a bonus CD containing 5 demos. Don't want the album of the month but still want all the benefits? Sign up to the standard tier using CLUB101POD and you'll still get the first month free. You'll also get free shipping on all orders, 10% off at the bar and on secondhand vinyl in store, and exclusive access to sold out Rough Trade events. So don't hang around. Head to roughtrade.com/club and sign up with the code CLUB101POD. That's CLUB101POD and claim money off Rough Trade's Album of the Month today. This offer is for UK residents only. Do you play in bands? I did for the longest time, and I wish that I knew that DistroKid was a thing. I don't even think it existed back then. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of your royalties and earnings. 1 million+ artists rely on DistroKid to get their music on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all the major streaming services. When you get DistroKid, you can see a DistroKid bank and withdraw your earnings. You get notified when you've earned royalties and you can withdraw via the app. And you can even check your streaming stats on Spotify and Apple. Get 30% off your first year on DistroKid by going to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. 30% off for your first year. That's not bad. We know it's a tough world out there. Why don't you make it easier for yourself? And to get 30% off that free year as an artist, where you get 100% of your royalties and earnings, go to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. All right, stay with me. I'll be right back after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to 101 Part-Time Jobs, reporting from a car right now in Austin, Texas, where South by Southwest is happening. I'm sure you've probably read that a lot of bands have pulled out because of the US Army's involvement and the technologies that are going into killing people in Gaza. 101 stands in solidarity with all the bands that have pulled out in South by Southwest. So we're going to do some reruns this week. Today's is a rerun of my episode with Amy Taylor from Amel and the Sniffers. Cheers for listening as always. Shout out to 2000 Trees, our sponsors, who have just announced loads of excellent names this year. Los Campesinos, Lonely the Brave, Bex, who I'll be speaking to live on the 7th of April at our live show with Bob Villain in London. Lauren Hibbard, Cherim, loads of excellent bands just been announced for 2000 Trees. And as a 101 listener, you can get 50 quid off your weekend ticket. Head to 2000trees.co.uk, use the voucher code 101pod and get 50 quid off your weekend ticket. That's ridiculous. That's free money. Head to 2000trees.co.uk, pick up your ticket, 101pod for 50 quid off. And I'll see you there. Also, if you're in London, we're doing two live podcasts. Tuesday the 19th, we're doing it with While She Sleeps. Totally excellently DIY metal band from Sheffield. I'm sure you know about them. Tickets are available for that. And the following day with Watford sister duo, The Staves. They're both at Signature Brew on the 19th and 20th of March. That's Tuesday and Wednesday. If you want to come down, get some tickets from 101parttimejobs.com/live. Cheers.
How long do you consider it to be, you know, your priority? How many years has it been your priority playing in bands?
Well, let me think for a second. I think we started touring pretty intensely 2018. 2018. So pretty much since then it's been the priority, but it's only been able to do that because I've been able to sleep on people's couches kind of thing. So it's not that I made money, like enough money to pay rent or survive, but we were just away so much that it covered costs kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it only kind of up until, I think it was like the start of 2020 was the first time we got to pay ourselves a wage from the band. And then, yeah.
That's nuts, isn't it? I mean, like, are you able to, because I guess everyone's on their own path. Everyone's doing their own thing. And, you know, I guess you try and just make the best decisions that you can do at the time. Was it a case for you where it was like, look, you know, you're playing records, you can tour, people are coming to the shows, people are buying those records. And like, did you just think, fuck it, I'm just gonna have fun with this, you know, and see how far?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we weren't making, I was just, working. And then I actually hurt my knee and I was like, I'm just going to quit my job. and then I can't even remember what happened really, but basically I was just like, this is kind of what I want to do and it's going well. And there's like, we're touring a little bit and work, that doesn't really work with work. And I remember, I was like working, there's a supermarket in Australia called Coles.
Yeah.
It's like one of the big ones. And it's like, I worked in the scoop and weigh section, which was like, it's kind of like free falling nuts and dried apricots and stuff. And I was wearing like an apron and a hat. And then someone recognized me in an apron and a hat. And I was like, fuck, I shouldn't be doing this job anymore.
That's so fun. I mean, what was your kind of life like then, like working at that supermarket? Like, what was your like routine like? Were you working sort of a lot? Were you going out a lot? What was your thinking?
Well, there was heaps of variables. So, I mean, depends on which snapshot you're looking at. But at one point it was like I lived on the same street that the shop was at. I really love working and stuff. So no matter what job I'd be doing, I always just like do it really like, you know, if I was working at, say, that job, it's like I would just like fucking love it and like make sure I was doing a really good job. I just can't help it. I just enjoy it. Even though I'm like, you know, obviously corporations and consumerism is crap. It's like I'm just a bit of a bulldog with that shit. So I just get up and I'd start work about 9. And then it depends on if I was doing one or two stores, because I was a bit of like a contractor. So I either finish at midday and do that 5 days a week. And then also sometimes was like working at a rehearsal studio in the nighttime. So I'd finish the shift and then I'd go home and then I'd get a train about an hour and a half north to another place where I'd do like, I had like a job at the kind of reception of a rehearsal studio.
Hour and a half's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, but I just really wanted the job because I studied music business for a bit and I just, they were like, oh, do you want to like kind of do, we'll like intern you and you can like do reception and reply to emails and like post Facebook posts and set up people's gear. And I was like, yeah, I'll definitely do that. So I just like did that. And then I'd get home at like midnight from the train. I'd have to run to get the train. I'd literally have to lock up the studio and then sprint to the train to get the last train back.
That's so funny. That's funny. My roommates think that I'm a cunt, but I pay the rent on time every month.
That's right.
That's it. That's why I knew you'd be good for this.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the thing. It doesn't matter if you don't like me or if you like me. It doesn't matter because I'm self-reliant and I can pay my own way and I can supply my own shit.
That's so great. I mean, I think growing up listening to rock and roll and punk rock and having fun, I think there's a bit of an element of, you know, quote unquote, like laziness about it. But I don't think that's true at all.
I think it's mostly true. Like, I feel like there's a lot of people who celebrate laziness and are anti-working and they just want to get fucked up and they want to have fun. And I respect that for them. And that's fucking awesome. But it's just not me. Like, I got so much energy and stuff. And yeah, I really like working and not even because I like working, just because I like being productive and stuff. And it feels satisfying to me. Like, even cleaning the house sometimes is fun to me because I like it.
Growing up, I mean, what was your first job?
My first job I had when I was like 13 and a half. I grew up in a small town and I worked with this really, really lovely woman called Robin. And she owned a ribbon factory thing. Not really factory, it was smaller than that. But it was like in the back of her house in a granny flat. She had a little setup and I was like putting ribbons on spools.
Was that like, did you find yourself like growing into that role quickly?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I really liked it. I wanted to get better at it and I wanted to do a good job. And I really liked Robin too. She was really encouraging and stuff. And I liked it better than school. And I liked hanging out with adults more than I did kids, really.
Yeah. I mean, being like self-reliant, is that something that, you know, growing up that was like quite instilled in you for a young age? You know, are there any sort of moments that stick out for you that might be, you know?
Definitely. Because, yeah, my dad would always, I'd get like $5 pocket money and he'd be like, might feel like a lot now, but it'll go really quick. Or like I'd get $100 from like, yeah, work like for a month or whatever. And then, you know, I feel like a lot, but you got to tuck it away because it'll go a lot. And I grew up in a household where, like, especially from my dad, like money was just always kind of a factor, like thinking about money and like stressing about money. And, you know, both of my parents are really hard workers. So I've just got that in me. And he was always like, you know, valued working, even though he hated it. He was always like, I hate, you know, if you can, Amy, be an accountant, like never work for your boss because it's, you're just making money for somebody else and we just get ripped off and got to work hard and it's week to week, blah, blah, blah. Even though we were super lucky, like we had like a house and food and everything, there was no problem. It was still a stress though. But he always used to say, you got to start your own business because why be an angel when you can be God?
Why be an angel when you can be God? That's good, isn't it?
Why work for a company when you can own the company?
Totally. I mean, that's the thing, you know, I feel like we a lot of us like learn that at a young age, but then it kind of feels like, how the fuck do you become a boss, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Start a band, maybe?
Start a band, but I mean, fuck, barely. But yeah. I had that job. And then my second job I got just as I turned 14, which is the legal age to work in Australia, pretty much. I think it's 14 and 9 months. And I got a job straight away. So I had two jobs by the time I was 15, as well as going to school. But I did that, and then I worked at IGA, which is like another big supermarket in Australia, in the deli. And I really loved that job as well. Actually, on this new album, there's a song called Snakes, which I sing about it.
Ace. I mean, working a supermarket is, there's a nice bit of like routine, like satisfactory routine there, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I really like knowing, like learning how to like pack down the deli every night. And then after I got good and fast enough at that, I like ended up doing the cashiers and everything as well. And like, you know, pulling the like cereal boxes so the shelves look nice. It sounds really stupid, but it's something just super satisfying about it. It just feels good to me when I can do something good and like learn, even if it's something simple like that. I guess I just liked it. And I was just, you know, it's not easy for everyone to get jobs, though. I want to, like, note that. But it was easy for me, and I just liked it.
Totally. I think, you know, there have been a few times in my life where it's been like, fuck, you know, you get into, like, a bit of a blue area of the job that you're working. And then at some point you realize, like, you are in control of yourself to an extent, and you can learn to enjoy it. And, you know, when you do a good job at something, that's a nice feeling.
It is a nice feeling. And even though it kind of, you know, by default makes me like a bitch, it's like, I don't care because it feels good.
Have you taken that into like band world, into AML world?
I think so, yeah. It's like I really like the work side of AML as well, which I think has probably been like a positive mostly for the band. We have management and they do a really good job, and we have like labels who really help out. But I really like thinking about that stuff, and I like having control over my business, and I like trying to understand and know as much as I can. Like, even though I still am still really entry level with all the music business and all that stuff, it's like I always want to take the time to try and learn as much as I can so I know what the fuck's going on. I don't want anybody to rip me off, or I don't want to be made out to be an idiot. I actually just really care about it, and I like learning about it, and it's really interesting to me as well. I think people like expect musicians to be really one dimensional, and like you were saying, the stereotype where you just get fucked up and like fucking fuck around. But I mean, I'm definitely my father and my mother's daughter, I guess.
And you got to work hard, right? I mean, growing up with independent record labels, you know, you don't have to dig far to find out how hard, you know, like Discord were working, or any independent record label, Merge Records, how people put the graft in, you know, like decades of work from, you know, starting off in your bedroom or your garage or something, packaging records and realizing the time and the energy, but also the organizational skills that you kind of have to learn as part of that.
Yeah, definitely. But I think just as well, like with us, our band, we've been pretty lucky. Like, I really love like all the DIY scenes and stuff like that. But if I'm honest, like, we've kind of sidestepped that experience. And it's been, yeah, really lucky because there's heaps of people working around us and working for us, which has kind of been like sometimes a challenge for me, because I would always kind of think like, well, if I'm not doing it, I didn't really earn it. But then I guess I've kind of started to think, well, they're all just people who love music, who are just doing a job, who, like, you know, we all get to be a part of this like music industry where it's, we all just get to pretty much just like survive off music, even though there's like weird compromises you have to make and like weird choices you have to make and things you don't necessarily always want to do. But then I just remember, like, yeah, when I worked at the supermarket, I didn't always want to fucking put the chickens in the oven, but I did it. And that's just being alive. You can't always just do stuff you like.
Totally. I feel like there must be so many different levels of that. And I suppose you just got to try and like enjoy it, right?
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, just like appreciate that like everybody is just a person, and they're just trying to get by the same way I am or they are. And yeah.
That's why I love doing these interviews, like, not to pat myself. That's not what I'm not patting myself on the back. But like, I'm just saying, like, I love chatting to this because this is real shit, you know. And I think like growing up, being into like rock music, guitar music, there's always that kind of like, not pedestal, but maybe pedestal. But like, it's always, you know, bands are so far out of arm's distance, you know. And I want, and it feels like, I don't know if it's us getting older or the internet or what, but it feels like everything's a lot more transparent and there's a lot more accountability to how musicians operate.
Definitely. And I agree with you on that 100%. I also like, I love the idea, because for example, like, I love Dolly Parton and I love Cardi B. That's just like two names. Yeah. But it's like, I like that, to me, like, if I met them, I wouldn't talk to them. I wouldn't look at them. I would, because I just don't want them to be humans. Like, I don't want to be able to reach them. I want them to be like gods on earth that I can just love and appreciate from afar. So it's like, I love that. I personally like want to be pretty transparent and like, I want to be open, and I don't ever want to like false advertise myself as something that I'm not. Like, you know, I'm saying all this stuff about being working class and stuff, but currently, like, I just got JobKeeper and like I bought linen sheets. Like, the government is sorting me out. So I feel pretty like very spoiled financially at the moment. And like, you know what I mean? But anyway,
well, you gotta take it what you can. I say, fuck them.
I definitely think that, because it's like, I just think it's fine and I'm comfortable with it. But you know, like, I guess it's like, I want to be as transparent about who I am as I can possibly be without feeling uncomfortable. But I also like the idea of like musicians and people you admire being distant. So someone you can just love from a distant, like otherworldly and shit. And yeah, both are kind of dope. And I feel like that's why Dolly's so good, because she can kind of do both. She's like super open and herself, but she's also super far away and like private, and it's cool.
Have you had to sort of grow into your identity, you know, as the singer of the band? Is that something that's evolving? You know, we're talking about transparency and how, and you know, to me that says, you know, how you are on stage, how you are in interviews such as this, how you are in public when you're meeting people. Has that bit been a bit of like a journey, or has that been like a bit of a self-discovery for you?
I think so, yeah. I think definitely, but I only kind of know this version of my life. Like, well, I guess there's only one version, but but I mean, like, I guess this is all I know. So like when we started, I was like 19 or 20 or whatever, and I'm still pretty young, like 25. So I guess like naturally you're just kind of like figuring yourself out and how you fit into places and how your brain works and, you know, what makes you tick and what doesn't. So I guess it's kind of like anybody else, but my just experiences have been really different. Like I'm perceived by heaps of people and like really loved by lots of people, but also like, you know, not loved by lots of people too. So it's a bizarre fucking thing. Whatever I do now is very strange, but I think I've just grown into it, and it's just normalish to me, even though it's super foreign.
When I last saw you in London, you were saying how you can't wait to go see your best friend the next day. And, you know, it's the last show of that tour. And it makes me think now, you know, chatting to, you know, your mates, chatting to people who are close to you, has that been, you know, have they been like mentors to you? Have you been able to, you know, reflect with their help and their support?
I think yes and no at like various points. I feel like over the last year, it's like I've had lots of changes within my friend groups, just like being stationary for the first time in ages. Like, you know, because we were touring so much, and that was during my formative kind of early 20s where most people are going to festivals together and getting cooked. It's like me and the boys were just working and like on tour just together. And then so when I came back last year, I like had to like reshuffle a bunch of social stuff for the better. But I feel like now over the last year, I've like made some friendships that are like super fucking dope and important, and like taught me heaps about myself and like how to be a good person and like rah, 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 all that stuff.
Fuck yeah. I was reading an interview with someone yesterday, and it was like, they were saying how, you know, we all have to sort out our own houses before we can do much else. I mean, I totally feel that about myself. Do you feel that about you?
Sort out our houses and as in
like mentally and our souls or whatever.
I think definitely so. Like, I feel like you can't expect everybody else to work around your shit. I guess it's like the way I feel about being self-reliant kind of carries on to my mental health as well. But in saying that, I feel like if I can show compassion to just even just like one or two people who are having a shit time who haven't got their houses sorted out. It's like sometimes you just need a housekeeper to help you clean up because the mess is so big. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like even though it's on us to look after our quote unquote houses, it's like it's all the people that come round and visit the houses that help keep it tidy constantly kind of thing.
Totally. And I think being like open to meeting new people and being open to new experiences is such a big part of that.
Definitely. Absolutely. And as well, it's super easy. Like I can be don't get me wrong, I can be a huge bitch, but like, that's all I really want is just like to meet people who are interesting and like fun and, you know, make life feel fucking sweet. Like, you know, like crazy hooligans and fun people and like people who, you know, are interesting and like people who aren't like me and people who are like me. Like, that's just the best stuff ever. But at the same time, I can just be a fucking cold bitch and not talk to anyone. So, I mean, I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to that.
Introducing Ampollo, the new app for musicians. Using AI stem separation, play along to any song, improving your practice and performance. Record audio or video and connect with musicians all over the world. Collaborating and creating together. Think Google Docs meets TikTok, but for musicians. There's a huge range of video and audio editing tools, and the best part? It's free. Download today and make your mark. Ampollo, made for music.
It, you know, in terms of touring, you know, being on the road for the last, you know, 3 years, pretty heavy. It's different now, isn't it, with the last year being off? But, you know, just when lockdown started, do you remember how, you know, what was your mindset about touring? You know, how do you become?
I was really bugged by touring because it was just a lot. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm super grateful and touring and like all that shit is a fucking miracle, but it was, I was exhausted and I really loved being in Australia and like I really loved just like being, yeah, I get homesick pretty bad and we were just on the road for like pretty much in 2019 I was overseas every month of the year, which is like a pretty big step for only like being overseas once or twice before a band or, I mean, before 2019 or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was kind of happy to relax a little bit and just be a human for a second.
I mean, it's kind of mad to think, you know, how fucking isolated Australia is. Like, if you're going to be in a band that's playing all, in all these sort of quote unquote markets or whatever, to come to the US, to come to Europe, to go around, like, that's a lot of traveling for you. Like, that can't be understated.
Oh, big time. Yeah. I think it's, you know, for like, for example, we're so far away that right now we're in the Southern Hemisphere and it's winter. Like, you know, it's different down here and it's far away. Like, you know, if you're in a Northern Hemisphere band, you can just dart between like New York to London in a night and go home the next day. But for us to like be able to afford to tour, the tours have to be like months long because the flights are so expensive, the visas are so expensive. So, yeah, like before we recorded the first album, we were overseas for 4 months straight just because it was the only way we could afford to like make it work for us.
Fuck.
Just to fly home cost thousands and thousands of dollars and it honestly just wasn't feasible at that point in time. So we just went cutthroat with it and like just played for as long as we could.
Does that, and I'm talking about like the finance stuff there, like that money stuff, does that come naturally to you lot?
Like
being organized with it, I mean, and being like being, yeah, organized, like kind of knowing what you have to do, seeing and having some kind of strategy.
Yeah, it comes naturally to me. Like, I'm a huge saver and, like, you know, I, like, will always buy the cheapest thing and, like, can't spend money even if I want to, really. But that's just because how I was brought up. And I'm happy about that, but I'm trying to, like, not do that all the time because it's boring. But at the same time, yeah, we have, like, management and staff who they really help with that kind of thing as well. Like, I'm probably more tight-ass than them, if I'm honest. I'm just like, ooh. Even if someone's, like, oh, I feel sorry for the boys sometimes. I'll be like, oh, I need an Uber or I need a pedal. And I'll be like, oh, my God.
It's funny because I feel like the stereotype of like a manager is to be that tight bastard and to do that. You know, that your relationship with your management, how's that been? You know, how did you meet them? How's that relationship evolved?
So our manager, there's two of them. They're like a husband. I don't know if they're married, actually. They're a partnership called Parisi and Simone. And we played at their venue in the front bar once, and he was like, that was pretty cool. And then we ran into him at a burger shop, and he was like, oh, if you guys ever need advice, let me know. He wasn't managing anyone at the time, but he's managed bands before, and he'd managed, do you know Chopper Reed?
No.
He's just an Australian famous criminal. You can Google him. He's got a movie about him and stuff. He's just kind of like a criminal celebrity in Australia. But, yeah, he's not alive anymore, unfortunately. But, yeah, so Freezy was managing some people. We saw him at a burger shop. He was like, if you need advice, let me know. And then I think we actually did need some help with some questions. And we met up with him a couple of times. And then he helped us out for free for ages. And then he was like, why don't we just do this? We're like, that sounds pretty dope. And then his partner, Simone, jumped on board. So they kind of like do a tag team dealing with different kind of things because they're both pretty switched on and done stuff in the music industry before. But, you know, they're like family to in a lot of ways, like cook us dinner or like, you know, they'll like go for a walk with us or whatever. And yeah.
With that stuff, you know, we'd like asking him questions. It just makes me think, you know, we talk about jobs before the band and during, you know, maybe during the band as well. But I mean, all those decisions, especially as well, I guess like punk band world is just what I know, but like it feels like there are so many little jobs there for you to do. And on top of that, it feels like, you know, you can make a bad decision and shit topples over. I mean, it feels like it might happen sometimes. I mean, is that true for you?
Yeah, I think so. But I feel I'm not very afraid to make bad decisions if it's just me to deal with the consequences. Like if I was just alone in this world, which I'm not, I would just be making calls constantly. But I feel like just because of the nature of Amel and the Sniffers, it's like there's three other people with opinions. There's two managers with opinions. Like it's not actually just me as much as like I probably would. Part of me really wants that because it'd just be super easy to just fuck up and not worry about it. But
yeah,
I don't really have many opportunities to do that because there's, everyone else chucks in their 2 cents, which, you know, I'm really grateful for as well. But I can also be like struggle with that because I'm a bit of a control freak. And I also really like the idea of just having like heaps of power in like the most respectful way, like not without walking on anyone. But it's just appealing to me to like have power over my voice and my thoughts and like my mistakes and like all of that stuff.
And with lyrics as well, right?
Yeah, with lyrics, I don't let anybody else write lyrics. That's really important to me because that's my voice and that's my job. And somebody else writes lyrics for me, then I don't know what's the point of me being there because at this stage anyway, because that's what I provide and that's, it's my experiences that I don't want to act and pretend I have somebody else's feelings.
You got a real great way of summing up something in a song. You know, earlier we talked about transparency and trying to be like your true self. Have you ever had any troubles with that in your lyrics? Has there ever been something you wanted to write about, or maybe you felt like you were giving too much of yourself away?
Sometimes, I feel like that a little bit, but also sometimes I feel like I haven't done enough. But I think, you know, if I look back, it's like I was always just as true to myself as I possibly could be at that time as well. Like, I mean, I sometimes just have no idea. I don't understand myself all the time and don't figure it out until later. Yeah. What I was thinking or what I was doing. And sometimes I'm just like autopiloting through life and don't really know, don't have much self-awareness. So it's sometimes you think you're being authentic and then you look back, you're like, who the fuck was that? But it's always just authentic to who you are. But I guess then you know better later and you realize you know better and you're like, damn, that bitch was dumb.
Is that, you know, like that kind of autopilot thing? And like, that's like a human nature thing, right? It's like, you know, you hope you try and get yourself in a good situation and, you know, it's nice to kind of not have to kind of fucking worry every day or try to think too hard about what you're doing every day. And to me, that's certainly like a trait of being in a touring band, of being on that kind of autopilot. You know what you're doing exactly every day. You're not necessarily having to make new decisions. Does that make sense? And has that kind of affected the way that you write?
I guess so. I guess I can't remember right now because last year was just so void of tour, but I remember like being on tour and stuff. And it's like, I really struggle with just being a passenger in life. Like it's a pretty passive most of the day, like, cause we just have a van and we'll wake up at like 9 a.m, jump in the car, drive to the next venue, get there at 3 kind of thing. There's not a lot of freedom within that. Like surprisingly, I guess, to people who don't tour that much, at least in our setup, there isn't. And then I don't know what we're talking about, but yeah, it's autopilot for sure. I think I struggle with autopilot. I prefer to like have, heaps of control over my life and stuff in and out of control kind of way.
With like Comfort to Me, when you were writing it, was there a feeling that you wanted to do, you know, progress your sound or do something different? I mean, because you got your sound so locked down.
I guess a little bit. Like I just think, I know I was saying that a little bit earlier to somebody, but I just think with, like, if you do your thing naturally, if you're doing it almost every day, you just slightly, it just changes and it gets better. And I really don't value like stagnant stuff and staying the same that much. I think it's unnatural to stay the same forever and change is really important. So I think just in a natural kind of way, it's changed and, you know, my brain's changed and I think about stuff differently and I want to say stuff differently. And, you know, like the boys have gotten real pretty good at their instruments and just from playing them all the time. And we listen to different kinds of music all the time. So there's different influences coming in. And I just think, bring on the change, whatever it is. It's definitely you know, we put more time into it and we paid a little more money for the producer and stuff. And so it's different. But I think that's kind of natural, really.
Yeah.
And that's what how I find life should be.
Totally.
For me in moment in time. And, you know, then I can always come back at some point and go like, well, at least I tried that and that was crap. And I actually prefer just like scuzzy stuff. But I just couldn't, I'd be pretending to be something I wasn't if I just tried to make the first EP again, I guess.
Yeah, for real. Do you feel like, you know, coming from Melbourne where there's so many bands and like, you know, a few, you know, a bunch of great venues and, you know, when you were touring all the time and then maybe compared to the last 18 months, was it weird to kind of leave that scene and then kind of come back to it? What's your story there?
I think it was kind of weird. I guess we were never really part of a particular scene, but we just played with anybody and pretty much everyone who would ask us, and not everyone would ask us because people have various opinions on us as a band or whatever. But coming back, I guess it was really kind of exciting for all of us because we never really get to have a chance to just like, you know, go out on weekends and see other bands and not be playing and stuff. Because yeah. I mean, the weekends and the nights where other bands are playing, we'd always be playing too. So it was pretty fun to just go out and see other bands and like also just kind of feel like we're a part of a community in some kind of way. Cause we just get flight, like bopped around the whole earth and flying around off our fucking, you know, metaphorical heads. So
yeah. Yeah.
It was cool to just be kind of like, oh yeah, like there's heaps of sick bands and like, it was just kind of healthy in an unhealthy way.
It's cool. Every time I've seen you in London, it has felt like a community in the crowd. And that's like a really special thing. And I'm not just blowing smoke when I say that. You know, I think there's a few bands that, you know, that you're with in your life. And when you go see them, it's an event. You know what I mean? It's a party, but there's also like, it's energy in the room. Do you know what I mean? And you mentioned community there, which makes me think it's funny. You know, you have that at home, but you might be coming to London or Paris or New York and you bring that with you.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so cool. Yeah, because that's all anybody, oh, not anybody, I'm sure heaps of people, that's all they want is just like, that's what I wanted our shows. Like, I like that, like, the old punks come. I like that, like, the young hipsters come. I like that the working class come. I like that people with money come. I like that ugly people come. And I like that trendy people come. Like, it should just be for absolutely any cunt who wants to have a go and have a get amongst it. And I think, like, you know, just energy's contagious and, like, spirit's contagious, and if you're all in a room together having a go, then like, fuck yeah, it's pretty dope.
Amazing. Well, Amy, thank you so much. And like, you know, that idea, it's funny, right? Because it's actually quite, that's quite a simple idea, isn't it? I think it might be quite easy for a lot of people to get lost in the muddleness of playing music and being an artist, whereas that it's a boiled down, that's like a very succinct, you know, idea.
I think that too. Like, I think people really, you know, can get caught up overcomplicating stuff and overthinking stuff and trying to like put words into something to make it interesting. But in the end, it's like music's just been there forever. Like, and music just makes people want to dance, and music makes, it's just, that's all it is. It doesn't matter what the form it comes in, like whether you like us or you like fucking, I don't know, whoever. It's like, that's just, it's just good fun. It's just connection.
Fuck yeah. Just to end with, what's the I thought about this the other day because I think everyone's got a story like this. What's the biggest coincidence that's ever happened in your life?
Coincidence? Oh my god, I don't know, but this is stupid. But yeah, my friend, my partner, he was looking literally the morning, he was like, oh, I want to get this desk, like a fold out desk that I can just work from home from. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he was walking home from work and he was like, he was walking home from work to go to Kmart. And then no fucking kidding, that same day on the side of the road, he found the exact desk that he wanted, like fold up desk, fits perfectly under his window. That's happened twice as well. But that happened to me too. Like, I was like, I want to get some speakers for my TV. And so it sounds a bit nicer when I watch movies. No fucking kidding. Like a couple mornings later, I walked out of my house and on the side of the road, with surround sound speakers.
No fucking way.
I've got them right now. I'm going to watch a movie later and I'll be using them. How crazy is that?
So that was Amy Taylor from 2021 or so here on 101 Part-Time Jobs. Cheers for listening. There'll be another rerun in a couple of days with John Darnielle from the Mountain Goats, who have a new record out. So be back then. If you're in a band or you're an artist and you want to release your own records, head to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod and you'll get 30% off your first year. All your music will go on Apple, Spotify, TikTok, Instagram, all the rest, and you'll get paid 100% of the royalties. Join 1 million other artists and musicians releasing their own music, taking it into their own hands. Head to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod to get 30% off your first year.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.